This is what used to be the main street of Marysville. What didn't burn simply melted.
The death toll from Australia's worst fire in a quarter of a century continues to rise.
Raging wildfires brought devastating dust to Australia in the southern state of Victoria. The conflagration followed 3 days of sweltering, record-breaking heat. We wonder, could this be a warning about our future as climate change proceeds? Let's find out more about what is happening to Australia's climate with Professor Barry Brook. He's one of Australia's top young climate scientists and director of the Research Institute for Climate Change and Sustainability at the University of Adelaide. Barry, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Our time together is kind of limited, so let's get right to the point. Are sudden heat waves and the following fires, are they what we would expect from climate change?
They're certainly what we would expect. These are extreme events, and as you change the average weather, then you change the extremes as well. And they get distorted such that events that were once very rare or never occurred can become quite common, even with what is apparently a small change in the average. So the heat waves that Australia has experienced in January and February of 2009 is extraordinary in the sense that it's very long, and it's also the hottest heat wave on record, coming on top of a very dry drought.
It's strange for us because we picture that heat wave in the south, and yet there are storms, violent storms, with flooding in the north. What has changed for Australia's climate and why?
Well, certainly a consistent prediction of climate science is that we should get more extreme weather in all its forms, not just heat waves, but also precipitation events. There's more energy in the climate system now than there was in the past. So it's able to evaporate more water from the surface and from the oceans, which dries out the landscape and makes it more prone for fire. Also creates the conditions where you can have record-breaking floods as well as heat waves. So these extreme events, whilst they've occurred in the past, are consistent with what we would expect with climate change in terms of them becoming more frequent. So I think this is a major concern, that what we're seeing in Australia are the sort of events that are predicted to be common in the next 50 years. Well, they're apparently becoming common even as we speak. So that is perhaps one indication that the rate of change in the climate system is at the upper end of what predictions such as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change may have anticipated.
And people talk about adapting to climate change. We've already seen Australian farmers abandon long-held property for lack of water, and now it seems like just living in a well-treated area might be dangerous. Is the only possible adaptation perhaps to abandon parts of the country in the long run? Do you think that's taking it too far? I mean, think about Secretary Stephen Chu now in the U.S. He suggested that agriculture might end in California.
I think what will certainly end is wasteful practices. And Australia's agriculture has been characterised by a waste of water. Australia is a very dry continent, so agriculture is difficult in many parts, and we've been dependent on irrigated agriculture from a couple of our large river systems. But on a per capita basis, because Australia is so sparsely populated, there's actually still a lot of water. Australia's in the top third of all countries for available water. So it's been a poor use of water that's caused devastation in these river systems, an over-allocation of water for irrigation, and all of these problems. Now, in the case of California, climate change is going to lead to a major shortage of water at certain key times. For instance, in summer, when the rivers were fed by snowpack melt, that is going to decline dramatically, and that will mean that what was once reliable stream flows will no longer be the case. There is scope for adaptation in all of these changes. We can look at more water-efficient agriculture, for instance. We can look at changing where we grow certain crops and where we undertake pastoral agriculture. But it's going to be a major challenge. That means business as usual, and what we have come to expect as being a productive landscape will not necessarily be that way, even within the next few decades.
Dr. Brooks, you've also promised part two of your article, How Much Warming is in the Pipeline. I have to admit, I haven't found it yet, and I can't wait. How much warming is developing, even if we stopped all these greenhouse gases?
A major problem is that there are two big effects people are having on the climate system. One of them is a warming effect from CO2 and other greenhouse gases. But the other, which is somewhat balancing this, is a cooling effect from low-level tropospheric aerosols. These are pollutants such as sulfates that come from coal-fired power stations and vehicle emissions. A city like LA, for instance, is a classic example of the low-lying haze and smog. That's a dimming effect that causes less sunlight to reach the surface than otherwise would. And globally, that has a cooling effect on the climate. The worst situation is in Asia, where there's a lot of fires which burn animal dung, and of course a lot of new coal-fired power stations that are not capturing their sulfate emissions. All of this adds up to a cooling effect on the climate that may be as high as about half of the warming effect that we would otherwise have expected. Now, if you get rid of all of the dung burning and vehicle emissions and coal-fired power stations that will be required to stop the ongoing build-up of greenhouse gases, and you also remove the major source of that cooling effect, all that comes to a head when we talk then about how the climate is going to rebalance itself. And the best evidence is we've got about 2 to 2.5 degrees of warming in the pipeline. So if we shut off all greenhouse gas emissions now, because we're also shutting off aerosol emissions, we've got a lot more warming on the way.
I was wondering if even the current economic crisis might cause enough factories to shut down and enough people to drive less that perhaps we might see a slight increase in warming just from that reduction.
I think that's a very likely hypothesis. It's been speculated that the global financial crisis may cause almost certainly will cause a reduction in the amount of greenhouse gases going in the atmosphere because of reduction in industries. But that's a long-term effect. That takes years and decades to accumulate its effect in terms of warming, as it's happened in the last 50 years. But as soon as those factories stop producing sulfate aerosols, that's all washed out of the atmosphere within weeks. And so that's a very rapid effect. So I agree with you strongly that the net effect of the economic downturn is likely to be an extra pulse of warming rather than cooling, even if in the long term it has a slight cooling effect on the planet in terms of fewer greenhouse gases being released each year.
We do live in an ironic universe. If we clean up, it might actually hurt us in the short run. I'm thinking, too, about the situation in Australia. There's less media coverage of heat deaths, but heat deaths definitely do go up along with these spikes in the temperature, obviously.
Heat deaths are important. People get stressed in times when they can't cool down, so when there's extended hot periods. Now, in the past, a lot of people have died in severe heat waves because they've had no access to air conditioning. That was the situation in Europe in that extreme summer of 2003, when it was about 5 degrees hotter than the average, and there were certain times when Europe got up to over 40 degrees Celsius, which is over 100 Fahrenheit. So these are very stressful times. In areas where people can't adapt, can't essentially burn extra greenhouse gases by switching on air conditioners, they will suffer more. And so we're likely to see more heat-related deaths in areas of the world that are heating up at least as rapidly as the developed world but have no access to forms of adaptation that can actually allow you to cool down. And, of course, as we've seen in Australia, when you get persistent hot, dry weather and hot, dry winds coming in off the continent, which are drawn out of the continent by unusual weather systems, that's what creates tinderbox conditions that allows wildfires to erupt, and that's what happened in southern Australia, where we've had over 170 people killed in the wildfire events that followed the extreme heat wave of February 2009. These are the sort of dramatic events that are going to increase in frequency as the climate continues to warm and become more energetic.
Well, you know, whether we're scientists or not, it's going to be tough to watch some of these events and deaths increasing. I wonder, what's your personal reaction to these tragedies?
I think we have to make sure that the suffering of people involved in these tragedies, the damage caused, are not in vain. In other words, that we recognize these as the major warning signals, the flashing red light saying we've got to do something to avoid even more disastrous events occurring in the future, because it's quite clear that on our current business as usual pathway, these events will become appallingly regular. And it will reach the point that in many places we simply can't adapt. Too many people are being killed by climate change. Too many areas are becoming uninhabitable. and the world as we know it will be totally transformed. We're not at that point right now, or at least I think the balance of probability is that we're not at that point, but it does suggest that we have to move into emergency mode, change our energy supplies to those that don't release carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, be more sensible about how we live with a more dynamic climate system in terms of adapting with our agriculture, the way we build cities and houses, the way we treat the natural environment. These are major lessons of which we're only seeing the first portends of a very dark future. Now, we can avoid that, much like Scrooge in the Dickens tale of the Christmas Carol, witnessing the ghosts and avoiding a dark future. We can do the same, but we have to listen to the ghosts. And things like the heatwave and the bushfires that have occurred in Australia this year, Hurricane Katrina a few years ago, these are the ghosts telling us to avoid a dark future.
We've been talking with Professor Barry Brook. He holds the Sir Hubert Wilkins Chair of Climate Change at the University of Adelaide. As we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to add for our North American listeners?
I guess I'm very excited about the new administration in the US and the fact that they've appointed people with strong scientific credentials who recognize the seriousness of this problem. I've been talking a lot about potential solutions on my blog, and people are welcome to come and visit there as well to hear more of my thoughts on climate change and energy solutions. And the web address for that is bravenewclimate.com.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Professor Brook, thank you so much for helping us out.
That's a pleasure.